Good evening, members. Welcome to this overview and scrutiny committee. We have two additional members here as guests tonight, Councillor Boyce and Councillor Bass, and we also have Matthew Canning from Suez. Thank you. Chairman's notices. Sound recording of the meeting. Please note that the Council will be recording any part of this meeting held in open session for subsequent publication on the Council's website. Start of the meeting, an announcement will be made about the sound recording. Members of the public attending the meeting with a view to speaking are deemed to be given permission to be included in the recording. Fire. In the event of fire, a siren will sound. Please use the fire exit marked with the green running man. The fire assembly point is outside the main entrance of council offices. Please gather there and wait for further instructions. Health and safety. Please be advised of different levels of flooring within the council chamber. There are steps behind the main horseshoe as well as a side room. Closed circuit television. Meetings held in the council chamber are monitored and recorded by closed circuit television for security purposes only. Minutes of the last meeting. Oh, apologies for absence, sorry.
We have apologies from Councillor Elliott.
And we have two other people missing as well, don't we? Councillor White and...
I haven't received apologies for my...
Okay. All right. Minutes of the last meeting. To confirm minutes of the meeting of the overview and scrutiny held on the 29th of August 2018, pages 5 to 10. Page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9. Can I propose from a second?
Read.
Okay, well done. Is it in order that we accept her apologies for being late? No. Okay. Public participation. There are none, so I'll carry on disclosure of interests. Any disclosure of interest at all? Not at all? Right. Move on to item 6, waste update. You going to run through that? Or who's
Thank you. Yes, yep. Thank you, Chairman. Good evening, members. Yes, the purpose of this report is to update members and give information regarding vehicle breakdowns. This was identified as part of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee's programme of work in response to questions raised by members regarding reliability and the impact of breakdowns on the collection service we provide to our customers. So we've produced a report for you this evening which sets out some background detail to the breakdowns and frequencies. You'll note that there are approximately 14 vehicles put out each day on the working day, which actually equates to over 3,000 routes per annum. And obviously, if there are problems with vehicles, they are obviously reported back to the council as well as the supervisors that work for the service themselves. Analysis has been done under 331 of the report, and you'll see some bullet points laid out as to some of the issues that have resulted in interruption to the service being provided to our customers. They're not all from vehicle breakdowns. You'll see that road closures, issues around parked cars, weather conditions, and obviously we did have some snow and ice earlier in the year. And obviously some issues regarding staff sickness and absence from the team themselves. I will pick out one particular note in there with regard to severely potholed and damaged private roads. The district has a number of private roads in the area which the conditions from time to time are quite poor. A really positive piece of proactive work between ourselves and the contractor and Carol Love working with the residents to actually ensure that those responsible for the roads themselves acted and made those necessary repairs which allow these goods vehicles to travel and resume collection. So there's a number of reasons why disruptions occasionally happen to our service themselves. Under section 3.4, you'll see there is a reference to the vehicle, waste vehicle, and some of the problems that they've had. And as Chairman mentioned, have Matthew Canning, who's a regional manager from Suez, here this evening to actually help us with perhaps that little bit of background there. It has been quite unusual to have the number of breakdowns, and you'll see that Suez have actually taken proactive action working with the council to address that. But perhaps, Mr. Canning, can I ask you to just outline some of the problems you've solved and what you've done to help resolve those, please? Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for inviting me along. So we have a fleet department at Suez, and I've got our experts involved, and we have had meetings with our manufacturers. And when I talk about manufacturers, we have chassis manufacturers, body manufacturers, and bin lift manufacturers. We've had issues with all of those different elements of the vehicles, and we've held meetings with them to try and find out whether there was any trends in the vehicle breakdowns, and to make sure that their response was quick when we did have breakdowns. Particularly in May, was a very bad month for us. Since then, the trend of breakdowns has actually reduced, and we have a further meeting on the 24th of October with the manufacturers to review the performance of the fleet for Maldon District Council.
Thank you. You'll see within the appendix the number of breakdowns that we have has been identified, particularly around the rounds, and we can revisit any of that as members would wish as we go through the report. So that sets out sort of the background to the breakdowns, the number of breakdowns, and obviously what the contractor is doing to address the issues themselves. Secondly, within the report, members are inquiring about end destination for recycling materials, and perhaps I can ask Carol Love, who's our contract manager, to give us a little bit of background on that, please, and you'll find that in Appendix 2.
Thank you. Yes, all of our drive mixed recycling, as we call it, that's the stuff in the pink bags, actually goes to a company called Essex Reclamation in Witham. And myself and one of my colleagues actually went along to the company to check out the process there. We have been before, but in light of changes to the world markets and China closing its doors, which I mentioned in the report, the Environment Agency were keen to make sure that nothing was being stockpiled and all the materials were going to companies that were known to them, if you like. Now, when I visited, I was actually quite pleased with the responses I got from John Bassett, who is the one of the managers there, and they're quite welcome. What they said is if any members would like to go and see the operation there, then that's something that I can organise going forward. It's a family business. I think the guy that actually runs it lives in the Maldon district, and I've known him for many years, and I think the council's actually worked with Essex Reclamation before in the past. So we've come away very satisfied that the materials are being sorted properly and sorted to the best of the ability of the site there, and that they've been disposed of properly. They themselves have to produce a monthly return which goes to the Environment Agency and all their end destinations for materials from their site, and of course that's checked by the Environment Agency under the permit that they've got. So some of our material is going abroad. As I say, it's a world market. What they do at Essex Rec is they sell the paper products to a company called Paperlink, and they are a national exporter of paper, and they will send it to the best markets, and it will depend on where those are month from month. So it's quite difficult for me to sort of say exactly where every tonne has gone, but we've got an approximation there from when the materials are going. The plastic actually stays in the UK and goes to a company called Monoworld, where it's sorted further and granulated, and the other material, sort of cans, aluminium cans and steel cans, also stay in the UK, and as well as some of the paper. So,
thank you. And you'll also see within the appendix as well a breakdown of the material, whether that be residual waste, food waste, the tonnages, and obviously the transfer facility, and ultimately the end destination. So, Chairman, that's a brief summary of the report, but obviously we'll be happy to answer any questions members may have.
Councillor Jury.
Thank you, Chairman. The report is, or the appendix one, it's not very helpful. It tells us vehicle breakdown, which is one thing, but do we know what the breakdowns were? I mean, are they minor, major? What are they?
Yeah, I mean, sorry, put those on. Some of them have been major, some of them have been minor. We've had glass pods where they've stuck in the tip position and we've not been able to close them. That would obviously be at the tipping facility. Various bin lift faults where the bin lifts stop working on automatic or stop working at all. We've had some water leaks where the coolant hoses have blown off the radiator and dumped all of the coolant from the vehicle. We've had some brake warning symbols come up on the dash. Vehicles go into limp mode. if it's amber, then we can nurse them back to the yard. If they're red, obviously we're not allowed to move them until the manufacturer has been out to take that off and tow it back in. We've had some studs. The one we've taken the wheel nuts off, the studs have actually come off as well, so we've had to replace those. Number of hydraulic leaks, and the engine management lights have also come on at various times. So quite a varied amount. There's no real trends. I've looked through the data, that there is no real trends.
I mean, it sounds as though the problem's right across the board, then. It's not just chassis manufacturers or compactor manufacturers. It's something to do with everything. Is that correct?
Yeah, so if you take a refuse truck, you've obviously got the chassis and the engine, which is the what I would call the running gear. You've then got the body. So in the body, you've got a blade that sweeps to pull the material in. That goes between 700 and 800 times a day. And then you've got your bin lifts on the back. They go anything from 1,000 to 1,200 times a day up and down. There's various sensors, springs, hydraulic hoses, etc. So very complex bits of kit. And as technology on our cars gets better, they get passed on to the trucks as well. So, you know, we've got Euro 6 engines, so with the cats have to regenerate. And whereas you would, our cars may go on the motorway, normal trucks would go on a run from an A to B, because they're refuse trucks to regenerate the cat, then that needs to actually sit and stand for an hour and a half, so that it gets to the heat to burn the particles to be able to be Euro 6 compliant.
Yeah, I mean, just say to you, Chairman, I mean, I've run commercial
yes.
for 38 years, so I've got a pretty good idea of what it is, but yeah. I was expecting you to say that nearly all the trouble was with one thing, and I'm a bit horrified to discover that you've got chassis cab problems, you've got compactor problems, you've got everything. I mean, none of this, apart from the engine equipment, none of this is actually new science. It's all been going on for longer than I've been running commercial vehicles, so I'm really amazed that manufacturers are churning out stuff that actually is so unreliable. I mean, my oldest lorry is over 20 years old, a six-wheel tipper, and we still use it on a daily basis. It's not got the same equipment that you've got, but engine, chassis, gearbox, all the rest of it. I don't expect to get a fraction of these kind of problems. I can't say on compactors because I don't know. I've never operated a compactor. But, I mean, most of what we run is still running original equipment. I mean, we may have replaced the odd diff, or we may have had work done on a gearbox or something like that. But if I was having the kind of problems that you're apparently having, I'd be horrified and probably bankrupt, because we could not afford to have that kind of unreliability. And if we were getting it, we would either have to completely change the fleet or just give up, because the money isn't there to do it. And I fully understand that, but I just am amazed that when I'm seeing your lorries around, 2, 3, 4 years old, that they're having this kind of day-to-day problems. And I mean, looking at the chart, the graph, I mean, obviously March, April, May, you had a very serious collection of problems. And looking at the chart either side of it, the initial feeling on my mind is that something's gone wrong with the maintenance side, and the work's not being work that should have been done hasn't been done. Maybe things have just been ignored almost is how it looks. I mean, it's guesswork because the graph doesn't tell you the answer to that. But I mean, it's hopefully something that you're looking at, and you can say, well, there was a specific reason for these ones, or yes, somebody forgot to look at anything for 3 months. I find it worrying and I find it puzzling. Thank you, Chairman.
Yeah,
Thanks very much for your comments. I can assure you that the vehicles are maintained in line with our O licence. I've actually just been added to the O licence, so I'm very interested to make sure, as you would imagine, that they are maintained as and when they need to be maintained. I'd like to extend for you to come down to the yard and have a look at our facilities at any time you'd like. If you'd like to, the chairman has got my contact details. I'd be more than happy for you to come down and have a look at our facilities. You've been in the business as well for a period of time, so you know, if you've got any advice that maybe we've overlooked, I'd be more than happy to take that on board. I'm afraid, because of the way that refuse trucks are, and the amount of, you know, it's if you think about what goes in the back of some of these trucks, it is like putting paste in the back, like an abrasive paste in the back of a truck, and that goes in and gets pushed and pulled about six, 700 times during the day, and compacts under immense pressure. It's inevitable at times that we will get issues. The vehicles are maintained in line with the O licence every 6 weeks, so they come in and they get serviced. They're MOT'd every year, as you know. I'm sure that running a business, you're on the O licence and a CPC holder as well. So it's something we can't afford, like you, to not maintain vehicles, because we get awful amount of trouble. Yes, we have had a blip, certainly in March, where we had six big breakdowns, and May, for the size of the fleet at Maldon, it's just, as you say, it would make you bankrupt. But obviously, with a bigger company, we've been able to pull resources in. Maybe not on the same day, but at a later time. That's something that we certainly have. We've added to our spare capacity as well. So when the contract was tendered, there was one spare vehicle. We now run with three to try and make sure that we maintain the service for you. Any of you that have experienced issues in your areas, all I can do is apologise, but assure you that our intentions are honourable and we do want to complete on a daily basis.
Councillor, Chairman, just I was going to say, well, thank you for the explanation. You'd be pleased to know that I never have any trouble with the people collecting the rubbish in ours. So they're obviously doing something right.
Councillor Savage, then Councillor Dobson.
Thank you. It's very interesting. I've not had any problems, and if it wasn't picked up one day, I know first thing in the morning it's there, so I'm quite happy with that. But mine concerns materials at end destination, which I raised at the last time. It's a very interesting breakdown where it goes. But the question that I asked then, I'm going to ask now, has any of our rubbish that's gone overseas been flotsam, jetsam, or finished up in the sea? In case you don't understand, flotsam is where the weather washes stuff off a boat, and jetsam is where the captain says it's got to go overboard to maintain the stability of the vessel. Has any of this ever finished up in the sea? So all these pictures on the media, we can say none of that is ours.
Right. The material that does go abroad actually goes over in containers, and they now have to be, obviously they're sealed and they're photographed. They photograph them before they close the doors, and then when they're offloaded at the other side, they're photographed again to make sure it's still the stuff that's actually gone onto the boats. I don't know why it would not be, but that's what they do. Can you add to that at all, Mark?
Yes, certainly. As Carol said, the majority of the material, or all of the material that goes from Maldon, would be baled as well. So to maximise the weight in the container, the Essex Rec would bale the material, and that would then be loaded into containers. They get photographed as each bale goes in, so you can see the load being built into that container. They're then shut. The doors are secured shut. There are tags put on, again photographed and locked. So once that door is shut, unless that container was to burst open through some accident or the ship going down, I would say it was highly unlikely, if not impossible, for your material to have ended up as flotsam or waste in the sea.
Well, I thank you for that, but recently in a different industry, a lot of very old pineapples turned up, and that was a container that went over, and it took 2 years for it to surface. But anyway, I thank you for your answer.
Councillor Dobson.
Thank you, Chairman. I think it's important to see where we've come from to where we are now. It's a success for the council, the waste contract, in my opinion. Like Councillor Durick and Councillor Savage said, I used to get loads of complaints about waste collection, and I don't get any more, so thank you for that. And obviously we need to keep an eye on the vehicle breakdowns, but to me it seems like there was a problem and we need to track it longer over the, up until next year probably to make sure they're under control. My question is about, and the biggest question I get now is around the where the waste is going. Just an observation, I think we need to publicise this data, that where the rubbish is going, because this is, I've not seen this before, and it's really interesting, and I think it's a positive story of what we're doing with the rubbish. We should do a big PR push, and like you say, if they're inviting people to go down, the members, town councillors, if we could do that, I think we should really celebrate, and then we'll probably get our recycling figures up as well, which is already good.
We are actually planning to use the courier when it goes out to actually do a piece on Essex Reclamation. We've been in contact with John Bassett down there and asked him if he would assist us with this and perhaps allow us to do some photographs, etc. So that's one element. And once that piece has been done, then obviously we'll try and get the local press interested as well.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to ask one question. I've had some complaints. There's a new housing estate in Burnham on the Southminster Road just past the Ormiston Rivers Academy. the houses are being built, but there are people living in some of them. And I know that I believe, have had a problem getting onto this site. I've had one or two complaints that their rubbish hasn't been picked up and they've had to take it to a dump themselves. And I did say, well, I will try and find out. I said, but it's probably because the construction vehicles that are on there are probably making it difficult for the vehicle. Is that correct?
Yeah, the start of the site, that's been resolved, but we've got literally, they've got the three properties that are occupied that are further up. And in amongst those three properties, they're finishing other houses off. So you've got lots of vans and workmen still there. I believe that they're getting to the stage now where they're nearly complete. So last week we didn't have an issue, but we have been keeping an eye on it. I've gone down and picked up bags myself to help in a van rather than the large vehicle. But obviously the large vehicle has difficulty getting in there. While these works are ongoing, unfortunately, there will be times when they can't get in, but they will go back and try again.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to say, actually, I've got a lot of sympathy with lorries going into limp mode because we're suffering from that with two-year-old lorries at the moment, and Mercedes don't know what they are and nobody can find what they are, so that sort of struck a bell, or struck a chord, should I say. But I have an image here with severely pothole damaged private roads because we've got quite a lot of those in our ward. And, you know, you've got some residents fill the potholes in and some don't. So how are you going to work out where you're going to go? Because I think Cherry Blossom Lane in Cold Norton is the main one. How are we going to deal with those?
Well, the approach we took beforehand is that Sue has actually helped us to identify the worst roads. And we did an inspection prior to contacting residents, a joint inspection. Then we wrote to the residents and gave them a time span in which to actually repair their roads. Now, a majority of them actually did it within that time, but there was a couple where it couldn't be done. So what we did was we put a temporary collection point at the end of the road. We put in some larger bins, some bulk bins, and they used them until that road could be repaired, if you like. All of those roads are now being repaired. I'm hoping that this winter will not be as severe as last winter, because it was not only the private roads that were badly potholed, it was obviously the public roads, and you know, following the bad weather, we've had problems with the roadworks going on just about everywhere, which also causes a problem for sewers. So we'll have to play it by ear, but where they're identified by sewers, then we have a process in place to try and address that.
Thank you.
Good. I suspect that Cherry Blossom Road is going to be even more on my radar this winter than it was last winter then.
Right. One final question. I take it your drivers walk around the vehicles first thing in the morning and fill in their defect sheet booklet?
Indeed, yes. So we have a strict policy.
So you pick up faults straight away?
Absolutely.
At the end of the day?
We decide then whether they're roadworthy or whether they can go out without. We have a fitter on site in the morning
to rectify all the little bulbs and bits and pieces.
Absolutely.
Is there any more questions, members?
No.
Well, I thank Matthew for coming along.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Been very informative, and I think members are quite pleased to have some answers.
Good.
Thank you very much.
Very
nice. Right, we move on now to programme of works. Who's going to run through?
Okay. Thank you, Chairman. We've put in front of you the programme of work update. This was reviewed last time, and Appendix 1 shows the programme of work for the year and some updates on that to show what's happened since the last meeting and advise on the schedule for those. So obviously I'll take any questions on that sort of by exception rather than running through it line by line. But I really want to point you to Appendix 2, which covers the future council model work, which it was agreed last time that the committee wanted to take a closer look at. Within Appendix 2 there, it shows a timeline for the programme, highlighting some of the areas of work. And as it says in the report, if members would like to consider that, to highlight some of the areas of work, then I'll meet with a group or with the chairman to develop that into a programme of work for the committee for us to bring some detail back on the areas that you agree upon. Thank you.
Members, are there any particular things you'd like to highlight at this moment? Councillor Savage.
Well, there's only one thing. Between April 2019 and May 2019, there is an election. So let's hope that the new council upholds the current regime.
Okay. Anyone else? Councillor Bass.
Would you mind if I ask a question?
No means at all.
As chairman of the council, I regret to say I'm very much in the dark about the whole of this goings on. And I do detect, I'm a regular visitor to the office, as you know, and I do detect a degree of unease in the staff. And is it possible to explain to members when the staff or the majority of the staff will be decided whether they will have a job or not? And is there a date for that? Or has everyone got a different date?
Can you answer that?
happy to answer that. We're currently in consultation with all staff on the overall operating model. So everybody in the council, all of the staff, are subject to that consultation. With a view to the actual restructure and how it affects individuals, there are two phases to that consultation and how it works for people. Phase one, the consultation is simultaneous with that wider consultation upon the operating model, so September the 17th to October the 17th. We'll then welcome applications and almost immediately go into an interview process to appoint those who are in phase one. And phase one covers the strategy, performance and governance directorate and the resources directorate. It also includes the 7 tier two managers and the 2 lead specialists within the service delivery directorate. So all of those through October and November, we'll hold the interviews for all of those. And so everybody within those directorates will understand their position and whether they have a role in the council going forward. Phase two will be everybody who will be within the service delivery directorate, which will be all outward facing services. They'll be subject to a detailed consultation in February with those interviews taking place through March, and then they'll know their position going forward from there. And the idea is that everything is fully delivered, including the transformation of the IT and all of the new processes in place, to make sure that everything is complete by October 2019. So that's the roundup date for it, but those are the specific times which officers will know their position. And you're right, there is a degree of unease, as there's always going to be with a restructure of this size and being in consultation with staff. You know, there'll be some tough decisions, there will be the redundancies as members have agreed, so we recognise that, but that's the programme that we're running to.
And just one more, if I may.
Yes, you may.
What's the rough percentage then between phase one and phase two in numbers?
I don't have the exact details, but I think off the top of my head it's about 90 in the first stage, and then there'll be the rest, which will be 100 plus in phase two.
And they'll, so the first phase ones will know their position, what, by the end of November of this year? And then the rest of the poor devils have got to wait best part of a year before they know.
No, they should know by the end of March. It won't finish in terms of everybody taking their post, but the consultation for phase two will be February into March next year, with the interviews then following. So whilst we won't be fully live with all of the IT and everything being in place, everybody should know what their outcome is by the end of March or into April.
Long time to wait, isn't it?
It is a long time, but for a restructure of this size, it's relatively quick compared to some other public sector authorities that have taken sort of 2 years to get through that. So, you know, people will know the outcomes effectively. The launch of the programme was August, so people will know by sort of March, April. So that's 8 months, which is relatively quick, given what we've had to do within that time.
Right, members, what would you like to look at? Our next meeting is November, isn't it?
November the 24th, something like that.
And what have we got in December? Because obviously it's got to be compiled and come back to us. 29th of December?
No, 29th of November.
Okay.
That's the 29th of October. I think there's a cry. Sorry, with your permission,
yes, Chair. Right, yeah.
I think there's a sitting as the crime and disorder panel in late October, and then there's a full committee in 20-something of November.
Yes, Councillor Savage.
The crime and disorder has been, for October, has been cancelled and moved into November.
That's right.
It's all got shoved back. Rather than, from my view, look at it, I'd rather be kept up to date with reports on the progress to date as is laid out in the schedule of this Appendix 2.
Can we keep updates rather than have a specific item? Can you manage that?
That's absolutely fine.
Is that all right, members? We just get a continuous update rather than pick a single issue or two issues and not get anywhere, really, because it's past that time then, the time we get there.
Chairman, there is a transformation board which obviously monitors on a monthly basis, so we could obviously share the minutes of the transformation board, so you will obviously see highlighting and
that'd
tracking.
Be brilliant.
So
that'd be very
there is information available.
Are members happy with that?
Yes.
Right, okay. So we move on now to, got a script here somewhere.
106. This is a green page.
Yeah. Any items of scrutiny the members wish to consider anymore? No? Right. Any urgent matters to the chairman? I've got none. Exclusion of the press, public and press, to resolve under section 100A-4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the public be excluded from the meeting for the following item of business on the grounds that it involves the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of the Schedule 12A to the Acts, and that satisfies the public interest test. Thank you. Right, section 106 agreements.
Apologies, Chair, let me just stop all the recordings.
Can we all confirm that? Yeah. Pardon?
My recollection, Chairman, is that 106s haven't been in exclusion, press and public. So I just wonder, what is it in this one, because I haven't seen anything other, that is that special?
Can you answer that?
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely correct, Councillor. It wouldn't normally be a confidential paper. The only reason it is at this point is because some of the information, and I think it's around the Wimpy development, South Maldon, there's a renegotiation on some of the Section 106 information. Members have been given the most up-to-date information that includes some of that renegotiation. Once that renegotiation is complete, that will be published as it would be normally, and it will be fully public information. But because that's included, that's why it's a confidential report.
I thank you for that. In that case, Chairman, I will second the exclusion of press and public.
All in favour? All right.